Team, welcome to the Freedom Hut, the Buck Sexton podcast. Great to have you here with me today. And my, we have some things to dive into. Big election questions in NYC for the mayoral race. I thought if you had any election questions, you were an insurrectionist who wanted to stop minorities from voting while you were lighting our democracy on fire. Turns out that's not true. Big election mistakes can be made, even in a place like New York City where there's nothing but Democrats involved. There's a extension of the eviction moratorium thanks to Kavanaugh and the Supreme Court. Could there be a gas shortage in America over 4th of July weekend, Independence Day weekend? Plus, the energy secretary thinks, under the Biden administration, of course, that climate change may have influenced the building collapse in Florida. And Joe Biden gets a Vogue cover. So we have so much to get to today, friends. And before I dive into all of that, I got to tell you, I am really loving the calls that are being made these days by my friends at Carnivore Trading. I'm somebody who really wants to be very involved in managing my own money. I want to be somebody who's learning about the markets, who's making calls when it comes to the market. And I need expertise that I just don't have the time to get on my own because, well, I'm not somebody who's worked in the market for decades. But there are some Wall Street strategists out there. And this is what Carnivore Trading does for you. They're Wall Street strategists that have helped people make 30, 50%, even 100% a year on their money trading stocks. And even when the market's tough, Carnivore Trading is an anonymous team of elite Wall Street strategists, and they're legends among heavy hitters. OK, they've gone a bit rogue. They're letting everyday folks to see and mirror their explosive trades. Here's how it works. They will put you on their list. They'll text you and say, we're going after company XYZ. Here's the position sizing. Here's the target for the price. They make it so straightforward, and you can either go in on the trade or not. It's up to you. But these guys have an incredible track record. So that's what I would recommend. I'd say give them a shot. Go to getourtrades.com right now. Use promo code BUCK to get 2 weeks free. If you join, Carnivore guarantees you'll get 5 times your subscription fee or double your money back. Just go to getourtrades.com, promo code BUCK. Make sure you use that promo code so that you get the 2 weeks free. Plus, they know that you learned about it here on the show. Getourtrades.com, promo code BUCK. See website for guaranteed terms and conditions. Past performance, not a guarantee of future earnings. I really love Carnivore. It's so easy. They just text it to your phone. It's a lot of fun, too. I mean, I like learning about this stuff. I actually think it's quite an education to spend time finding out about stocks and how to invest in all this. And this has been really excellent. But this is day-to-day trading stuff, too. So you're really active. This is not just long-term investing, that kind of stuff. All right. So New York City. I was born in New York City. I know this place very well. The election board in New York erroneously counted 135,000 test ballots in the New York City mayor's race. Now, let's start with a few things here, okay? There are a couple things I want to put out there for you. First of all, this mayoral race, it's not easy to say that, mayoral. This mayor's race, we'll do it that way. This mayor's race is very much on the national radar, not just because New York is the largest city in America by a lot, but because this is a test of the defund narrative playing out within the Democrat Party. Eric Adams, why are people voting for Eric Adams in New York City? Well, the reason that a majority of them actually give based on the polling, based on the numbers, is that Eric Adams is a former police captain himself, and he is favorable to police. He does not believe in the lunacy of defund. And just so we're all very clear, can we take a quick trip down memory lane with Democrats saying defund? Producer Mark, play clip 3.
I am for defunding the police.
Yes, I support the defund movement.
Why use the word defund? Why use the word defund? And it's like, this is the word that's coming from the street. Many affluent suburbs have essentially already begun pursuing a defunding of the police in that they fund schools.
Not only do we need to disinvest in police, but we need to completely dismantle the Minneapolis Police Department.
The Minneapolis Police Department is rotten to the root.
Defund the police does not mean abolish the police. It means a dramatic reduction in the number of police in our poor communities. Police are terrorizing black and brown communities. The evidence is clear across the country.
That's what they were saying. That's what the left, the Democrats, were saying. I have to remind you of it now. I know you know it, but we have to actually hear it, because now they're playing games. Now they're trying to tell us that they didn't really mean that. They didn't really say it. In fact, Republicans are the ones who are trying to defund. They're so dishonest. It's so gross, isn't it? Days like today, you do feel good to be a conservative, because you get to say to yourself, at least I'm not living in total fantasy land. At least I can understand that in the society we live in, police are very useful and necessary, and that making it harder for them to do their jobs and making sure that there are fewer of them in places where they are needed means there will be more bad things that happen to good people. It's the most straightforward thing imaginable. But you're seeing a surge in Democrats doing things that are obviously dumb. And then when the consequences, sure enough, show up, they act like, well, what do you mean? I don't understand. I don't understand. Why would defund the police mean that police aren't as good at being police? Or when they kick open the border by getting rid of the Remain in Mexico policy. Wait, you mean if everyone who comes in the family unit can stay, that they're going to keep coming? Yes. Yes, they will. Oh, and with inflation, which we'll talk more about. Hold on a second. If I spend a bajillion dollars, if I just spend like 10 trillion or something, you mean there's more money and supply and demand and cause and effect still works? Yes. Yes. These are all very clear, very straightforward things, but Democrats run on emotion, not on reason. So it doesn't matter. You know, America runs on Duncan. Democrats run on emotion. They run on what feels instead of what is. And that's how we got to that madness with the defund the police narrative for as long as we did. Oh, and I sent this to my team yesterday on the other show, the radio show. Yes, this is a New York Times opinion piece from June 12th, 2020. Yes, we mean literally abolish the police because reform won't happen. That was the title published in the New York Times. Yes, we mean literally abolish the police. And now they're saying, oh, we didn't mean like abolish the police. I think you did. I think you did. And now people are realizing how stupid it is. But that's why the New York City mayor's race is a national level story. That's why people who even live in, you know, rural parts of Wyoming who are tuned into the news cycle are wondering what's going to happen in New York because of the referendum on the defund police narrative, right? It's basically, are the Democrats now having to deal with reality and accept that they were completely wrong and absurd and insane? And they'll never fully accept those things, but they're at least beginning to. And I got to give Ted Cruz credit here. He had a pretty good one. Well, I'll let him say it to you. Play six.
Well, Sean, I got to say, it's remarkable that the White House is now apparently employing comedians. You know, there's an old Yiddish word for that, chutzpah. You know, for them to run out and claim that it's Republicans who want to defund the police, that's like an arsonist showing up at the fire and blaming the firemen. That's like the Chinese blaming the Americans for the Wuhan virus. That's like OJ saying he's going to help find the real killer. That's like Democrats saying they're the ones that want to build the wall. It's absurd. It's ridiculous. And they know it. But you know what? They're also counting on the media, all encircling Joe Biden and saying, poor Uncle Joe, he doesn't want to abolish your police.
Senor Cruz en fuego here. He knows. He knows. And so we have Democrats that are now trying to walk it back or distract. They're just doing anything they can, because they don't want perception to go against them on this. They have no ground to stand on here from a what side did they take and what the results were. It was terrible for the country. And they can try AOC and like to say it's like hysteria. And I'm like,
I was on an Instagram live and I was just like, oh my gosh, why are you like talking about defund when like there's so much more socialism to do?
They can try these things, but people ultimately aren't going to buy into it. So what they have to do now is just do a walk back, a quiet walk back, if you will. So let's dive into the board, because there's the defund narrative that hangs over all of this. And then there's the our sacred democracy. That's another component of it all. You have 135,000 test ballots counted. This is from the New York Times today. The New York City mayor's race plunged into chaos on Tuesday when the city board of elections released a new tally of votes in the Democratic primary, and then removed the tabulations from its website after citing a discrepancy. The results earlier in the day had suggested the race between Eric Adams and his two closest rivals had tightened significantly. But just a few hours after releasing the preliminary results, the elections board issued a cryptic tweet revealing a discrepancy in the report, saying it was working with its technical staff to identify where the discrepancy occurred. The tabulations were taken down on Tuesday, replaced by a new advisory that the ranked choice results would be available starting on June 30th. So, okay. Then, around 10:30 p.m., the board finally released a statement explaining that it had failed to remove sample ballot images used to test its ranked choice voting software. When the board ran the program, it counted both test and election night results, producing approximately 135,000 additional records. The ranked choice numbers, it said, would be tabulated again. The extraordinary sequence, the Times writes, of events seeded further confusion about the outcome and threw the closely watched contest into a new period of uncertainty at a consequential moment for the city. The Board of Elections, which has long been plagued by dysfunction and nepotism, this was its first try at implementing ranked choice voting. Skeptics had expressed doubts about the board's ability to pull off the process, though it is successfully used in other cities. Now, a lot of you are probably saying, you're probably sitting there nodding your head up and down saying, oh, wait a second. You mean that sometimes there are mistakes in an election process and they can be really substantial? You mean that things like oversight and recounts and checking and rechecking the votes and the tabulations to make sure they're accurate don't make you an insurrectionist who wants to destroy our democracy? Turns out there's a real need for this stuff. Turns out this is real, my friends. This is something that happens. And we all, you knew this, I knew this. This is merely an affirmation of that. This is merely something that you look at and you say, hold on a second. It turns out that we know that mistakes in elections get made and that that's why you have things like recounts. But Democrats want you to believe that we just had an election in 2020 where there were a lot of changes that were made to the procedures. That's a matter of record, a matter of fact. There were a lot of changes made with additional mail-in balloting and changes in signature match requirements, all kinds of stuff, extensions of deadlines in places like Pennsylvania, all these things that happened. And it was, remember the talking point, the most secure election in history, the most on-the-spot, error-free election in history. That was really the standard, we were told. That was really what we were being led to believe. The best election ever. Not just, yeah, we think it was right. There may be some errors here and there, but overall, Biden won this thing. No, it was, if you even want to look again, if you want to do a recount somewhere, you're basically a lunatic who's charging the Capitol. Oh my gosh. You know, and then they get the vapors over at CNN. Oh no, what will we do? Meanwhile, I saw this morning when I was drinking my coffee and I just said, you know, they're never going to stop. I mean, they're never going to stop with this stuff. ABC News had this story. A perfect storm. Bulletin warns of extremist violence as pandemic restrictions lift. You say that and you go, extremist violence as pandemic restrictions lift? Huh. I wonder, Does anyone want to guess? I wonder who they're talking about. Where are we supposed to be so concerned about this extremist violence happening? At the very bottom here, Homeland Security officials also expressed fears about the rise in recent mass shootings nationwide, increases our concern for violence, particularly in advance of upcoming holiday celebrations. While no specific plot has been identified for Independence Day, the intelligence brief ominously notes that federal officials are seeing evidence of radicals, particularly white supremacists and violence-prone people planning. That's right. Get ready for the white supremacist mass casualty attacks over Independence Day weekend, according to this bulletin. Let me tell you what's really happening here. If you work in the federal bureaucracy right now, and you know that I speak of something that I know in close detail, having actually done exactly this work, I was one of the people who used to sit in the CIA and then later in the intelligence division of the NYPD. I was one of the people who used to sit there, look at all the threat reporting and come up with what is the scale of the threat? What is the degree of threat right now? And is there an imminent plot? Is there just chatter? Because there's always chatter. I can find, you know what chatter means? They're picking up idiots saying things on message boards. So think about it that way. It's like the comments section come to life. Oh my gosh, there's extremist chatter. All right. Well, is it from extremists that are using an encrypted, are they using an encrypted communication technology and speaking in a foreign language and have set up offshore bank accounts and are really motivated to engage in attack? Or is it some moron who's probably high in his basement who's sounding off about how he's going to overthrow the government by himself? Well, you can just find this stuff. You can find whatever you want and then make a big deal of it. You can add it into your analysis. There are so many different ways to hedge because, like I said, I used to write for the PDB, for the Presidential Daily Brief. I've done this from the top level all the way down. So what do? You find things that your bosses, if you want to advance in the bureaucracy, you find things that your bosses want to see. And what do you think gets you a pat on the head and a performance award bonus or a, oh gosh, you're doing such a great job right now. If you're a federal bureaucrat who does threat reporting over domestic terrorism, you find some way to release right before the Independence Day holiday, a white supremacists are gathering for another attack, possibly based on vague sources that we won't actually dive into here. That's what you do, because that's what the Biden administration wants, because then you know what happens. A senior official, a Biden appointee, the CIA director or the FBI director or whomever, you know, White House czar for dealing with the insurrection, will speak to reporters and say, oh, I've seen threat reporting. We have to be on guard. Our intelligence community says we have to be on guard for the white nationalist terror threat over the Independence Day holiday. And that's what people want to hear in the administration. That's what the Biden team wants, because they have to keep everybody on the left. It's not just about fear. It's about fear and loathing, if you will. Yes, they want to keep people afraid of some imminent attack, but they also very much want to have a justification in the minds of Democrats for hating the other side. So it's, oh my gosh, there could be an attack. We're scared. But then on the other side of it, it's, and they're the reason we are afraid, you see. They're the reason that we all have to be terrified. Speaking of the threat of white supremacy and white nationalists and all the rest of it, you know, they passed legislation in Congress to remove statues of Confederate officials. Here's Nancy Pelosi talking about this. Play two.
Today, we are here for a very specific purpose. Madam Speaker, this weekend, we observe the birth of our nation, the 4th of July, when Americans joyfully celebrate the birth of America's independence and the blessings of liberty. As we do so, we solemnly recognize that those blessings have been denied to so many throughout our nation's history out of sheer bigotry and racism. This holiday, while a celebration, is also an opportunity to take steps to right the wrongs of history, starting here, right here in the U.S. Capitol. That is why today we're again passing legislation to remove statues of Confederate officials and other advocacies of bigotry and removing them from the U.S. Capitol. As I have said before, the halls of Congress are the very heart of our democracy. The statues that we display should embody our highest ideals as Americans, expressing who we are and who we aspire to be as a nation. Monuments to men or people who advocated cruelty and barbarism to achieve such a plainly racist end are a grotesque affront to those ideals. They are homage to hate, not heritage. They must be removed.
They must be removed, she says. A few thoughts on this. A few thoughts on this. One, you never hear them talk about how these are all Democrats. When they're talking about the Confederacy, this is Democrats. This is a Democrat party. Somehow there's no sense of hand-wringing. And no, it's a very generalized facing up to history, but never facing up to the history of the Democrat Party, which I think is just oh so convenient for them. This House vote, by the way, was 285 to 120. This was to remove statues of Confederates and other historical figures who advocated for slavery or white supremacy from any public display in the U.S. Capitol. Now, very interesting as well to add into all of this. What do we do about George Washington and the Founding Fathers? People who actually had slaves. What do we do? If the Democrats believe that we have to remove from the historical record those who were supportive of slavery, what do we do? And you'd say, oh, they're not actually going to try to remove Washington from the dollar and change the name of the city and all these things. Yet, they don't want to do that yet. But why is there a limiting principle on that? Right? Why is there, if we can't celebrate some aspects of what a person did in the past while understanding that they were morally deficient in others or as a product of their time, there were areas in which they fell short. I mean, and yes, slavery, we understand that's a great evil. And we can all look at this and say and understand that slavery is an awful thing. But the same notion of a retroactive decelebration of certain figures could come into effect with, oh, I don't know, being insufficiently devoted to LGBTQ plus rights. You say, no, they would never do that. The left would never do that. Really? Why? Why? I mean, we're going back now a couple of hundred years plus in the case of the Founding Fathers. So they have this opportunity. Look, it's all virtue signaling. Nancy Pelosi is going to go back into her mansion in San Francisco. And, you know, Dianne Feinstein's going to wonder when she's going to sell her $40 million lake house in Tahoe. And then they're going to pretend like they're big champions of the minorities in cities who continue to suffer from rising crime rates because of the Democrats' idiotic defund narrative. Oh, they're big champions for them. Sure, Nancy Pelosi really cares about low-income folks, about the poor, about minorities who are low-income. Obviously, a lot of minorities are, there are billionaire African-Americans in the country now, thankfully. But, you know, you look at this and you say to yourself, what is really the end goal here? What is really the end state of this all? And they don't have an answer for you now. Because if you look at this, you say to yourself, there is no limiting principle. Now what they have is an effort to control the way we think of our history as a means of achieving political power today. And yet in all of this, the Democrat Party never really comes up for the criticism that it deserves. I mean, the Democrat Party is the party of slavery, Jim Crow, segregation. This is a historical fact beyond any dispute. Then they say, oh, there was a reconfiguring of the parties. No, the Democrat Party was the party for those things. So why shouldn't we get rid of the Democrat Party? And that's what you want to know. I mean, yes, slavery, absolutely evil and atrocious, and Democrats were for it. Democrats fought for it. And then they supported segregation and Jim Crow and then segregation. They did those things. So shouldn't the Democrat Party have to change? Why not just have the American Socialist Party? Wouldn't be stained with the sin of supporting slavery in the past. Why should any Democrat be able to walk around and feel good about being associated with the Democrat Party? If historical association is enough to undermine any moral authority of an institution today, the Democrat Party should have to go away. But I have a feeling that's not going to happen.
The Senate has its chosen priority in a bipartisan bill, and the House has its priority in its reconciliation bill. And so the Senate doesn't run the show. The Senate doesn't tell the White House what to do. The Senate doesn't tell the House what to do. They're a co-equal partner in all of this. And so if the Senate really wants to run with their bipartisan bill, and they want to get on that, then they should give on reconciliation.
The Senate is like not the boss of me. She's technically correct. That is true. The Senate is not the boss of her. But AOC wants more money spent. Just to give you a sense of what we're heading toward now, my friends, do you know who? I think this should get more attention than it does. Do you know who the U.S. Senate Committee on the Budget chairman is?
Bernie Sanders.
That's right. The geriatric socialist from Vermont, whose greatest foe is math, is the guy who is the head of the U.S. Senate Committee on the Budget. He's the chairman. And he wants to spend on infrastructure and all these things $6 trillion. $6 trillion. I'm just wondering, when does Bernie Sanders even admit,
that's a lot of dough? That's a lot of money.
And I have to ask the question because you're already seeing that this has negative consequences. You're already seeing what's going on. They don't want to talk about it. The media definitely doesn't want you to be more aware of it. Don't pay attention to the fact that there are a lot of cities right now. And that's just where you have the fastest data and the most concentrated data on rentals, where rents are going up 10% this year, 15% this year. What do you think's going on there? Why are housing prices nationwide skyrocketing? The average house in America right now, and for a lot of you who are like, well, Buck, I own my house, so good, and yes, good for you. But the average house in America is worth $30,000 more now than it was just a few years ago. The average house, it's around $200,000, but it's worth $30,000 more. Why is that happening? What's going on here? Why are lumber costs 5x what they were a year or two ago? Well, there's a cause and effect here. Once again, the U.S. national debt is currently at $28.4 trillion. We are going to be at $30 trillion here in the blink of an eye. And I'm telling you this right now, future generations who are going to be less well off than their parents' generations were. But future generations will look back at this and say, how could people not have seen this coming? And understand that while we're heading toward the cliff here, and Republicans, the best they can do is say, hey, guys, can we just pump the brake a little bit? Bernie Sanders is there in the front seat saying, hit that accelerator, baby. He wants to go as fast as possible off the spending cliff. We're going to be over $30 trillion. Why not $100 trillion, right? You start to look at this in terms of the most obvious framing of the issue, and you say, we got a problem. Over the holiday here, we're looking at the possibility of gas shortages. That's right. There might be gas stations when you're traveling for Independence Day weekend without gas. You see, one of the issues we have here is that the U.S. economy didn't get more productive during the pandemic, but the U.S. government printed a whole lot of money and just gave it to people. And the U.S. government took on a whole lot more spending and just did it, just created. And remember, it's not even printing it. It's just digits on a computer screen. But this is what they're doing. There are massive monetary manipulations underway. And this stuff, I understand, this is not sexy. This doesn't get a ton of attention. You go, oh, the debt clock or whatever. People start to sit there and they say, you know, oh, I can't get that excited about this. And, you know, let's talk about the latest, you know, Hunter Biden video. Let's talk about Kim Kardashian or something that's just a little more, ooh, look at this. This really matters. Your rents are going up. Your cost of living going up. The money that you're making for your job right now, your wages, are worth less because of what is happening right now. And once you get closer and closer to hyperinflation, then things start to get really scary. You know, hyperinflation, I'm just going to say it, hyperinflation destroys economies and with it societies. Ron Paul has been running around for a long time saying that this is a major problem. And I know people feel like, well, he's been on the wrong side of this for a very long time. Ron Paul has been saying this is going to happen at some point. And we don't hear much from him, do we? We don't hear much about from the people that were saying we're spending too much money, but we're getting close to it now. You're starting to see this. They're telling you, oh, don't worry about inflation. It's transitory. Well, look, maybe I'm not saying it's going to be the Weimar Germany where people have wheelbarrows of cash to buy a loaf of bread. I'm not saying that. But the New York Times had a piece just earlier today. Fed unity cracks as inflation rises and officials debate future. I mean, this is real. Oh, by the way, the reason you might have the gas shortages is because there aren't enough gasoline truck drivers, in part because they moved to other positions, in part because they're staying home and getting paid to be at home. So you don't have enough people to actually work to get gas around to everybody. So that's just another indicator of something's not right with the economy. Something's going on here that's going to be a real problem. And you look back at the 70s and stagflation and the Carter era, and what you have is an economic period that the Democrats wish they could forget because everyone realizes it was really bad. It was really bad, particularly for those who rely on wages and those on fixed incomes. Because if you're getting paid and your dollars are worth less all the time, you're not in a position necessarily to bargain for more. And if you're getting paid a fixed amount from Social Security, from the government, I know they try to adjust for these things, but it doesn't work. They won't adjust fast enough. So you have the decline of purchasing power from the currency. And this is also a massive transfer of wealth to the asset holding class. The Democrats always talk about inequality, but at the end of the day, they're making inequality economically worse because if you own stuff like stocks, homes, the value of those things, the number value goes up as inflation rises. But if you're just somebody who relies on wages, if you're somebody who does not have assets to be inflated, you are actually losing in this proposition. So do you think big corporations care about this? No, not really. They'll just raise their prices. That's what they do because they're in a position to do so. They raise prices. You could say, oh, well, this will all eventually equal out. Yeah. How many years do you want to be spending 30% more on food, 30% more on rent? You know, yeah, maybe eventually things will get back to equilibrium. But this is what's going on here. And I will say this. There was a deficiency in the Trump administration of even talking. There was no sense of fiscal restraint. None. I don't remember once a serious conversation in the last 4 years about dealing with the debt. And now I know Democrats they're much worse about this, right? They're taking this and as I said, hitting the accelerator. But it should be very troubling to everybody that this is where we are. And there's just a sense of almost fatalism around it. Oh, I guess this is what's going to end up happening. I guess we're going to go forward with this. I am always somebody who believes in taking measures before you got a problem. And if you've been doing anything online lately, you know that big tech is following you everywhere. They're always asking, can I follow you to this site? And sometimes they don't even ask. They're just doing it. They're keeping all of your information. They're scanning your emails and then selling the data, I should say, to third-party advertisers. So you have to find ways to achieve privacy online for yourself. That's why I want you to try Secure. It's spelled S-E-K-U-R. This is an instant messaging and email platform hosted in Switzerland, and they protect your data with the strictest privacy laws in the world. Secure uses proprietary encryption technology, an independent platform, and Swiss privacy laws to ensure complete privacy and security of your data while on your desktop and in transit. So the stuff you're looking at, the stuff you're sending, there's actual security around this. They've got private instant messaging and email. Your conversations, messages, and data are kept completely safe and private. Secure does not mine your data and is not subject to the Cloud Act. Take back your freedom, privacy, and online security with Secure by going to SECUR.com. That's Secure.com. And use the coupon code BUCK. Use the coupon code BUCK for 1 week free and 25% off. Be sure and use that coupon code BUCK. Go to Secure.com, SECUR.com. Use coupon code BUCK and regain your privacy. Now, I haven't talked to you guys about the Florida building collapse yet. It was horrifying. It's awful. I mean, I think we all recognize right now you're going to have triple-digit casualties, deaths from that collapse in north of South Beach. And I remember when I first saw the headline, look, my thoughts immediately went to my two brothers who live in a very similar building. They both live in the same building. In a very similar building in South Beach, Miami, right on the beach. So that was my first thought. And I honestly had a little real moment of terrible personal anxiety over it just because that's where my thoughts went. And I'm sure a lot of you know what that feeling is like when you see a news story and you say, oh, my gosh, that's near loved ones, whether it's a shooting right outside of a store they go to or whatever it may be. This is a real tragedy. It's just beyond my words to convey how awful this is for all the families and all the people that have to deal with this loss now. And, we're going to find out more, I think, in the days ahead. We already have started to see it, that there were warning signs. There were problems that were clear, and there wasn't enough done. This is a 40-year-old building, and there were huge cracks and all the rest of it. Was there criminal negligence? That remains to be seen. But this is... I think the answer we'll find out is probably yes. But this is one of those moments in time where you say to yourself, we need people to look at this who are serious, right? We all want engineers who are excellent at what they do. I want structural engineers. I don't care what their politics are. I don't care what their race or gender or anything is. I just want excellent structural engineers because we all deserve to live in a safe building, right? A building that's not about to collapse on top of us. I mean, this even goes all the way back to the Code of Hammurabi, where this is where you get the idea of eye for an eye in the Bible. But this is where you have the code where if somebody made a building and it fell on top of the inhabitants, then the builder would also have a building fall on top of him, right? Because we all want to establish a baseline of safety and expectations that you have safety in your own home from the structure around you. Right? This is just, as I'm saying, since ancient times, people just want to make sure this building's not going to collapse on me, right? We want serious people handling these problems now. Because I'll tell you, even friends of mine, including my brothers in South Beach, are saying, okay, so this was this is the first time this has ever happened in the history of America like this. But is it the only time it's going to happen? Are there other buildings that people are concerned about? Well, we have individuals in this government, I have to point this out. We have individuals like Jennifer Granholm, who's a moron. I mean, I've interacted with her. I've dealt with her, the former governor of Michigan. She's a stupid person. And this is how she reacts to a stupid question from a journalist about whether climate change caused the building to collapse. Play one.
Given that we've seen an increase in these so-called extraordinary tides and the impact that that can have in areas like South Florida, do you think that climate could have played a role in that building's collapse?
Well, obviously, we don't know fully, but we do know that, the seas are rising. I mean, we know that we're losing inches and inches of beaches, not just in Florida, but all around. You know, Lake Michigan, where I'm from, they, you know, we've seen the loss of beaches because the waters are rising. So, you know, this is a phenomenon that will continue. Whether it we'll have to wait to see what the analysis is for this building, but the issue about resiliency and making sure we adapt to this changing climate, that's going to mean levees need to be built. That means seawalls need to be built. That means infrastructure needs to be built. We need to make sure that we invest enough in clearing out the forests so we don't have these weather events. We need to invest in hardening our transmission lines, maybe burying wires so that we can protect areas that are like tinderbox dry. There's so much investment that we need to do to protect ourselves from climate change, but also to address it and mitigate it. And hopefully these infrastructure bills, when taken together, will make a huge step and allow America to lead again.
You see what she did there? A building collapse in Miami equals climate change equals vote for the infrastructure bill equals, you know, green energy jobs or something, right? And these are unserious, but in a way terrifying people. And I think we should all be very clear about that. I mean, they're zealots. They're zealots. And climate change madness like this is just a religious belief for people who think they're smart but are actually really dumb. And which is a perfect description of Jennifer Granholm. And you know I don't like to be mean, but she's actually a moron. I was going to talk to you about the Jill Biden Vogue cover, but Jill Biden gets a Vogue cover. Melania doesn't. You don't even need me to weigh in on that other than to say, yeah, Democrats in America today, folks. That's right. No cover for Jill for Melania. But yeah, let's put Jill Biden on the cover. Sure. Oh, boy. Thanks again for listening to the Buck Sexton podcast. Please do share it, guys. Some people have been subscribing to the new podcast and forgetting about this one. This one is going to be happening every day. You can listen to both. This is a condensed version of what we'll be talking about later on the big radio show. Pass the buck. Please make sure you give me 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Give a review. Write a review if you would. Team, you're the best. Back with you tomorrow. Shields high.